You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up later, we find out how SWAT teams rose to prominence in the United States and how their role in policing has changed over the years.
First, if you or someone close to you has been diagnosed with celiac or other kinds of gluten sensitivity, a lot of foods went off the table, and maybe the idea of enjoying mealtimes did too.
Our next guest was diagnosed with celiac over 3 decades ago. Since then, she says there have been lots of positive developments in the worlds of cooking and nutrition, and being gluten-free isn't as hard as it used to be.
Beth Hilson joins us now. She's the founder of the Gluten Free Pantry. Her new book is called The Complete Guide to Living Well, Gluten Free, Everything You Need to Know to Go From Surviving to Thriving. Beth, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Rob. Hi, Veronica. It's nice to be here with you.
So when you got that diagnosis over 30 years ago, what was out there in the gluten-free world to help you out?
Well, there was not much. And what there was available tasted pretty awful. So I went to culinary school so I could try to figure out how to make things over so I could enjoy them. There's a tremendous disconnect, and we have such an emotional attachment to food. And so when somebody takes it off the plate, it's pretty sad for a lot of people. But it doesn't have to be anymore. I mean, I'm sure you've all noticed, and all of your listeners have noticed, that there is a plethora of gluten-free products available these days. So it's not like it was when I was diagnosed. When I found that I had celiac disease, I felt a lot better without the gluten. But, you know, I had to kind of make over everything that I had so that I was able to eat something that was tasty. So it took me a while to put that all back together. People don't have to do that necessarily these days because companies like the Gluten Free Pantry and so many others are now available.
It's interesting if you just take a stroll down the supermarket aisle. It seems as though it's almost trendy now to have gluten-free food. You see gluten-free labels on everything. You know, I almost expect to see them on an apple or something because it seems right. to make people more likely to buy it. Do you think that that's a good thing, this awareness of gluten-free, and maybe the fact that it is a little bit in popular consciousness too?
Well, you know, it's certainly a cornucopia for me because there are a lot more choices. And now we have two labels that are available on food products. One is, of course, the old FALPA legislation, which tells you if something contains wheat, and you know that you can't have that. But just last August, we were able to put together, the FDA passed a labeling rule that said that anything that puts gluten-free on the label now has to meet certain requirements, so it's safe for people with celiac disease. Before that, I think there was a lot of mislabeling, and people were coming to the marketplace with products that perhaps didn't meet all the standards that were safe for everybody on a gluten-free diet. But these days, I think we have a lot more safety. You notice that restaurants have a lot of products that are gluten-free or a lot of dishes on their menus. So there's so much more information. And Veronica, yes, that apple can be labeled gluten-free.
Because it
it's
is.
It's amazing because, right. But you know, there are still some gray areas, and that's why, you know, I wrote this book, so that people would kind of be able to dispel some of those myths and understand a little bit better what this diet is all about. The FDA rule says that anything that's inherently gluten-free can say gluten-free on it. But if you're newly diagnosed with celiac disease and you go to the supermarket and you see that a bottle of water says gluten-free on it or a carton of milk, you're going to wonder if that means that every other one that's not labeled that way is not safe, right? So, you know, it gets a little crazy. We need to get more definition of that, I think. Also, the gluten-free label is voluntary. So it may be something that you have been eating all along and it seems to be fine. It doesn't, it's not causing you any problems, but it doesn't say gluten-free on it. Well, that's the manufacturer's choice. And so if you still want to continue eating that, you're probably going to have to call the manufacturer and figure that out. But again, we've got so much more information and so many more products. That having been said, I do think that a lot of foods that are available to us are inherently gluten-free, besides that apple. Things like chicken and dairy products and fruits and vegetables are all perfectly safe for a gluten-free diet, and those are healthy, and they definitely should be the majority of what you're eating. And then supplement with that gluten-free donut or a piece of gluten-free bread or sandwich or cookies so that you have a balanced diet.
Well, let's strip this down to the basics. What is gluten? What is it most commonly found in?
Well, gluten is actually, you know, it's not something you can see. And actually, I think one of our one of the comedians, the late night comedians, walked up to a bunch of people and asked them what gluten was and whether they were on a gluten-free diet. And they said they were on the diet, but they didn't really know what they were avoiding. And, you know, truthfully, you can't see gluten. You can't, you know, you don't raise it. You don't water it. It's really a protein that's in wheat, rye, and barley. So you need to know a little more information. You need to know where it hides. It can hide in things like barbecue sauce that might be made from soy sauce. Soy sauce may have wheat in it. Brewer's yeast might be made from barley. Deli meats potentially have some gluten in them. French fries are now all coated with a wheat product to keep flavorings on them. Licorice. Who would have ever guessed that licorice is made with wheat? Lipstick, lip gloss, marinades. Oh, my gosh, salad dressings. I'm discovering that a lot of I always thought that Caesar dressing was safe. And now I'm discovering that in a lot of restaurants, rather, that they use soy sauce in it. So, you know, or even nuts, sugared nuts that are put into salads in restaurants or toppings in supermarkets may be coated with wheat. So you really have to read your labels.
And envelopes, one of our producers doesn't do the gluten thing. He says, is this true? Envelopes, the ones you lick to seal, can have gluten in them?
One of the big urban myths.
For years and years,
you could tell him he can lick those.
Okay, he's going to be licking a lot more envelopes on the job from now on. Yeah. That excuse does not hold up.
You know,
so I want to ask you.
It's actually, no, it doesn't have wheat in it.
A lot of people are probably listening and they think, gosh, everyone's talking about celiac and being gluten-free. And you hear about some of the ailments. You know, the gastrointestinal distress, you know, sometimes I guess it can cause rashes or anemia or at least contribute to that. So maybe people want to get tested and find out if this is a diet that they should be following. What is it? What's involved to find out whether you have celiac or maybe you're intolerant?
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question, Veronica, because so many people are going out there and just going on a gluten-free diet. And it's so easy to do these days. But, you know, if you have discomfort and you think that you may have celiac disease, you can't be tested if you're not eating gluten because the tests are really related to building antibodies to the gluten. And it's really a very simple blood test. Your primary care physician can do it. A gastroenterologist can do it. And then if that turns out to be positive, then your gastroenterologist will do a small bowel biopsy through an endoscopy. It takes about 20 minutes, light sedation, and they take a little some snippets of the small intestinal lining to see whether the villi are blunted. And if they're damaged, then they know that it's proof positive for celiac disease. There are a number of resources where people can check and where they can have their physicians check to see what the protocol is for testing for celiac disease. And one of them is the American College of Gastroenterology. They have a whole protocol for diagnosing, for testing, and then for following the diet. It's a very good resource, and a lot of physicians can refer to that. A lot of patients can refer their physicians to it as well.
So what are what are the symptoms that might make us say, hey, I want to get checked out here?
Well, you know, that is part of the problem, Rob. There are about 300 symptoms that you can have with celiac disease, and you can have no symptoms. So about 30% of people, or adults, I would say, have the typical digestive issues. And the rest may have things like anemia, as you mentioned. Some may have infertility. You might have a neuropathy or brain fog or joint aches. There are just a number of things. And, of course, you mentioned the skin rash, which is can be dermatitis herpetiformis, which is another form of celiac disease. So it's really, if you have anything that, you know, keeps persisting or you're concerned, it's so easy to get that blood test now. And I would urge people to do that or have that physician look into it for them before they decide to embrace the gluten-free diet.
We're talking to Beth Hilson. Her new book is The Complete Guide to Living Well, Gluten-Free.
And you can join the conversation. Are you or is someone close to you dealing with celiac disease or other kinds of gluten intolerance? And what are some of the biggest obstacles that you've had to deal with? Are you looking for some advice, maybe some cooking advice as well? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org.
We'll continue the conversation after a look at the latest news with Kristen Durst. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're continuing our conversation now with Beth Hilson. She's the author of Living Well, Gluten-Free.
She has advice on lifestyle, cooking, dining out, and you can join the show. If you or someone in your family had to go gluten-free, how did you make that adjustment? What are the biggest difficulties? What advice would you share? Are restaurants a thing of the past for you? Call with your experiences, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. Beth, in addition to the food stuff we'll get into in a minute, you also talk kind of about socializing gluten-free, what to do when you get that invitation over for a dinner. And you want to tactfully make sure that the food won't make you sick. How do you navigate that?
Right. Well, you know, I think that to me that's always the most difficult part of being gluten-free is to talk to somebody who's kind of a friend of yours rather than, you know, in a restaurant you don't have anything to lose or gain with when you're talking to a server. And you give them a good tip if they give you good service. But, you know, with a hostess, you don't want to put them on the spot. You don't want to overtax them. So you want to make it simple. You want to ask them. I usually start by asking what's on the menu and explain that I have a special diet. And my special diet is gluten-free. And these days, it's not like it's some odd thing because everybody seems to know somebody who's gluten-free. And then, for sure, offer to bring something. And if it seems like that, you know, that the hostess is understanding the diet and can leave a portion of, say, chicken that's plain and not marinated, or can understands that you should not put the croutons on the salad, and you can leave those on the side and perhaps even leave the dressing on the side until you check and see if it's safe. That's great. But if you bring a dish, then you know that, first of all, you're going to have something you can eat, guaranteed. And secondly, that you can also share it with everybody else and they can enjoy it and they probably won't even know it's gluten-free. I usually bring a main course and something with rice or with pasta in it, and with some kind of protein so that it's hearty. And then a dessert of some sort can be anything as simple as gluten-free brownies and maybe a little pint of ice cream.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, not bad.
We're going to go to the phones right now and take a call from Susan in Racine. Hi, Susan.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Thanks for taking my call. My son is... 7-year-old son is going to be getting tested for the blood test for celiac coming up, but he also has pretty bad allergies, and we've often wondered if there's a correlation between his gut health and the celiac and allergies. So I guess if you could take my question. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. And Susan wanting to know, is a celiac needing to be gluten-free connected somehow with allergies?
Certainly there's a connection between celiac disease and lactose intolerance because lactose is digested or absorbed on the tips of the villi, which are usually the first part of the intestine or the villi that are worn away when you have celiac disease. So certainly a physician would recommend probably eliminating dairy products for the first 6 months at least when a child is diagnosed. As far as the other allergies, you don't mention, Susan, whether they're airborne, respiratory, or whether they're digestive issues or not. Generally speaking, the other allergens are not necessarily related. Some skin issues, of course, can be. I'm not a physician, so that's something that you certainly should discuss with your physician to find out a little bit more about it. But one of the things that I always say to people is that when they have a number of things that they have to avoid, put a list together of the things you can have rather than the things you can't have. And so you know that you can substitute pretty easily. It's very empowering for people to know what you can have and how you can approach things in a positive way rather than saying, oh, my gosh, I can't eat here or I can't make this because it has X, Y, or Z and I'm allergic to that.
Susan, thanks and good luck to you and your family. We'll go to Patty in Eau Claire now. Patty, hi.
Yes, hi. I thought you guys might just get a kick out of this. I have a daughter who's gluten-free and dairy-free. And fortunately for her, she lives in New York City. And she can eat out pretty much anywhere where restaurants are accommodating this. She has a gluten-free bakery that's pretty much around the corner from her. Now it's very
expensive. Oh, I want to visit her.
Oh, my gosh. It's just incredible. And when she comes here, it's a little bit harder, but I am happy to say that I'm seeing more and more, even in my town of Eau Claire, with gluten-free and dairy-free options.
Interesting, Patty. Thanks for the call. Beth, are you seeing that too? Or maybe we used to have an oasis or two here and there for gluten-free availability. That's just becoming more and more the norm?
You know, one of the things that when I wrote the book, I had a whole section about gluten-free friendly cities and gluten-free friendly restaurants. And you know what? I could write a whole book on that now. I mean, it seems like it's everywhere. And people are finding that either they know somebody or they themselves are gluten-free. And so they're addressing that issue personally.
I want to ask you about what can be difficult for people who have to adopt a gluten-free lifestyle. And they love bread. What do you do about bread if you want to have a crusty loaf of something or a sandwich or something to dip in olive oil? Did you find a secret to making satisfying gluten-free bread?
I hear you. You know, when I first started on this diet, there was such a disconnect because there was nothing good out there and certainly no bread. And I loved all the European crusty bread, loaves of bread. These days, we can make them. And we can make them very well. And there are a lot of products that are available commercially that are pretty decent as well. There are a number of substitutions. I put some recipes in the book. But the trick is that if you find that you can do something that has a variety of different flours in it, like amaranth and millet and teff, and a little bit of rice flour, you're going to get more structure to your loaf. You're going to get a nice chewy texture, and you're also going to get a nice crust from it. I started out years ago, my first product that with gluten-free pantry, and one that I just adored, of course, was favorite sandwich bread because I wanted to have bread every day. And, you know, we've kind of grown from there. That sort of raised the bar, and I think that now the bar keeps going higher and higher, and every bakery has a better is building a better mousetrap or a better loaf of bread these days.
You know, I wonder if you're in a household where one person is gluten-free, everyone else isn't and doesn't want to take on that diet. How do you manage things so that the gluten surfaces, knives, all that stuff doesn't contaminate the person who doesn't want the stuff?
I'm glad you asked that, Rob. It's really, you know, the blended family is, it's a little bit of a challenge, you know, when you've got young kids, because they're always, you know, the ones who don't have the gluten allergy are always eating crackers or sandwiches or something and spreading the crumbs all over, or they're double dipping in the condiment jars and then the gluten-free person ends up with a whole mouthful of gluten-filled crumbs when they try to spread jam on their bread. You know, so you need to set a few protocols in your kitchen. But for the most part, if you have things that are labeled as gluten-free or things that are labeled with gluten, in our house we have very few things that have gluten in them. We primarily eat gluten-free. And so we draw skull and crossbones on those things that we can't, that are not allowed.
Appetizing.
You know, we have a sense of humor. So, but, you know, just so that you're mindful of that, if the person, if you have a person with gluten sensitivity and a person who can eat gluten, you might want to have two toasters because that's really hard to clean down. But for the most part, I say, you know, equal opportunity eating is the best medicine.
We have another call I want to get to, but real quickly before we do that, what about kissing? Do people with the celiac have to be careful who they kiss?
Right. Gluten smooching, right, is what I call it in the book. You know, it's like, think about it, okay, from my perspective, because I'm one of these girls who might go out with a guy who has a full beard or long hair or something, and, you know, he's going to eat a pizza, he's going to eat some French bread, and he's going to have some beer, and then he's going to lean over and give me a big smooch. Well, you know what? I'm going to get a little of that bread and a little of that beer in my mouth. So, you know, just ask your date to wipe their face, maybe rinse out with a little water before you start getting a little, a little smooching going there. But there are two other areas where smooching can be a problem. And one is when you have babies who are sitting in the high chair and they're stuffing their faces with Cheerios and animal crackers, and then they reach up and they give mom or dad a big kiss, and the first thing they do, of course, is they shove their fist in the person's mouth, you know, or next to their mouth, and it's full of gluten. So, you know, that's one area to be mindful of. The other is if you have a dog or you have pet food around. You know, how many of us don't kiss our dogs once in a while? And, you know, and if that dog has just been eating, you know, you might get a mouth full of gluten as well.
All right, Beth, thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
We've been talking to Beth Hilson. She has a new book out. It's called The Complete Guide to Living Well, Gluten-Free, Everything You Need to Know to Go from Surviving to Thriving.